Okay, we're in 2 Samuel chapter 20. So we just got past, Absalom rebelled and they put that down, and then David's going about his business, gets back to Jerusalem, and then another guy rebels named Shimei, or whatever his name was. And they, so we're at in chapter 20. He gets through all those things. It says, and there happened to be a man of Belial, whose name was Sheba, the son of Bichri, a Benjamite. And he blew a trumpet and said, we have no part in David, neither have we an inheritance in the son of Jesse, every man to his tents, O Israel. So they had just escorted David back to Jerusalem, right? First, and Israel was the first ones to do it. And then, the Judeans got a little jealous and they said, well, he's of our tribe. We should invite him back. And then, they had a little dispute, but then, he gets back to Jerusalem. They all, you're right, Janet, you're going to make it? Okay. So here's this guy, Sheba. And he's going to start another little rebellion. So every man of Israel went up from after David and followed Sheba, the son of Bichri. But the men of Judah clave unto their king from Jordan even to Jerusalem. And David came. Excuse me. So David came to his house at Jerusalem, and the king took the 10 women of his concubines, whom he had left to keep the house, and put them in ward and fed them, but went not in unto them, so they were shut up unto the day of their death, living in widowhood. Remember, those were the 10 that he left behind to watch over his house, and then Absalom came and went into them, which means he had sexual relations with them, and so now they were unclean. So when David comes back, he just sets them up in the house, takes care of them. But that's it for them. Then said the king to Amasa, assemble me the men of Judah within 3 days, and be thou here present. Who's this guy, Amasa? Well, if we were to look back in 2 Samuel 17, verse 25, tells us who he is. It says, and Absalom made Amasa captain over the host instead of Joab, which Amasa was a man's son whose name was Ithra, an Israelite, that went into Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, sister of Zariah, Joab's mother. So Israel and Absalom pitched in the land of Gilead. So this guy Amasa was an Israelite, and he was the general of the army of Israel rather than Joab, and Joab went to David and became his general. And he said, get me, assemble the. He went back to David apparently after Absalom was killed, and David says, get me the army together and within 3 days and be ready. So Amasa went to assemble the men of Judah, but he tarried longer than the set time which he had appointed him. So he didn't do what he was told. And David said to Abishai, now shall Sheba the son of Bichri do us more harm than did Absalom. Take thou thy lord's servants and pursue after him, lest he get him fenced cities and escape us. So David doesn't wait for Amasa to come back. He says to Abishai, okay, get some guys and go after this guy so he doesn't get away. And there went out after him Joab's men and the Cherethites and the Pelethites and all the mighty men, and they went out of Jerusalem to pursue after Sheba the son of Bichri. Remember, the Cherethites and Pelethites were guys from Philistia. And they had been like mercenaries, and they came down and they really liked David and they were loyal to him. So when Absalom rebelled, those guys went with David. and with their families and everything else. And when they were at the great stone, which is in Gibeon, Amasa went before them, and Joab's garment that he had put on was girded unto him. Meaning, it doesn't mean Amasa had Joab's garment, but Joab in his garment went unto him, and upon it a girdle with a sword fastening upon his loins in the sheath thereof, and as he went forth, it fell out. In a couple of other versions, it says it's a dagger, and when it says it fell out, it means he took it out. And Joab said to Amasa, "Art thou in health, my brother? You know, are you okay?" And Joab took Amasa and by the beard with the right hand to kiss him. I guess that was kind of a thing. He took him by the right hand and pulled him like he was going to kiss him. In those days, that was acceptable. But Amasa took no heed to the sword or the dagger that was in Joab's hand. So he smote him therewith in the fifth rib and shed out his bowels to the ground and struck him not again, and he died. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued after Sheba, the son of Bichri. It's kind of interesting that God points out it's the fifth rib. I don't know where the fifth rib is, but I guess it's if you knew something about...
It's a fatal wound.
Yeah, it's a fatal wound. It's a bad place to get stabbed.
Yeah, where your bowels gush out, yeah.
So that's pretty interesting that God would put that in there. So in case anybody wants to get rid of somebody, you know just learn a little where the fifth rib is. And,
right.
Okay. Anyway. Verse 11. And one of Joab's men stood by him and said, "He that favoreth Joab and he that is for David, let him go after Joab." And Amasa wallowed in blood in the midst of the highway. And when the man saw that all the people stood still, he removed Amasa out of the highway into the field and cast a cloth upon him when he saw that every man that came by him stood still. You know, they were shocked that he was there. He was supposed to be leading the army, but he wasn't doing what he was supposed to, apparently. And when he removed out of the way, all the people went. And when he was removed out of the highway, all the people went on after Joab to pursue Sheba, the son of Bichri. And he went through all the tribes of Israel, that's Sheba, unto Abel and to Beth Makkah, and all the Beerites, and they were gathered together and went also after him. And they came and besieged him in Abel Beth Maakah, and they cast up a bank against the city, and it stood in the trench, and all the people that were with Joab battered the wall to throw it down. So, you know, this was a walled city. And it had a trench in front, you know, so it would be hard to get across and get to the wall. So what they would do is they would start throwing dirt and they would build a siege ramp so that eventually it would get big enough and they could, you know, go up. So that's what they were doing. Then cried a wise woman out of the city, "Hear, hear, say I pray you unto Joab, come near hither, that I may speak with thee." So this woman calls out over the wall, and when he has come near unto her, the woman said, "Art thou Joab?" And he answered, "I am he." Then she said unto him, "Hear the words of thine handmaid." And he answered, "I do hear." Then she spake, saying, "They were wont to speak in old times, saying, they shall surely ask counsel at Abel." And so they ended the matter. "I am one of them that are peaceable and faithful in Israel. Thou seekest to destroy a city and a mother in Israel. Why wilt thou swallow up the inheritance of the Lord?" And Joab answered and said, "Far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. The matter is not so, but a man of Mount Ephraim, Sheba, the son of Bichri, by name hath lifted up his hand against the king, even against David. Deliver him only, and I will depart from this city. And the woman said unto Joab, behold, his head shall be thrown to thee over the wall. Wow. Then the woman went unto all the people in her wisdom, and they cut off the head of Sheba, the son of Bichri, and cast it out to Joab, and he blew the trumpet, and they retired from the city, every man to his tent. And Joab returned to Jerusalem unto the king. That's pretty cool. So she went back and she said to the people and say, look, they just want this one guy, and he caused a problem, and he went against the king. Let's give him his head. Mm-hmm. And so they did. And so then Joab was happy, and the rebellion ended, and that was it. Now, Joab was above all the host of Israel. It means he was the head four-star general. And Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the Cherethites and over the Pelethites. He was over the mercenaries. And Adoram was over the tribute. And Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was recorder. And Shira was scribe. And Zadok and Abiathar were the priests. And Ira also, the Jairite, was chief ruler about David. So he was like maybe the chief of staff or something. He kind of, you know, ran the palace. And
it says, and Ira the Jairite was also David's priest.
Oh, really? Okay. How about that? I'll take that. I don't know if it's true or not, but. Okay, chapter 21. And there was a famine. Okay, this is very interesting. There was a famine in the days of David, 3 years, year after year, and David inquired of the Lord. So I guess he waited 3 years. And then finally he went to God, and he said, you know, what's going on? And the Lord answered, it is for Saul and for his bloody house because he slew the Gibeonites. And the king called the Gibeonites and said unto them, now the Gibeonites were not of the children of Israel, but of the remnant of the Amorites. And the children of Israel had sworn unto them, and Saul sought to slay them in his zeal to the children of Israel and Judah. Okay, if you remember back in Joshua, Israel came into the promised land, and they conquered Ai and a couple other cities, and this people heard about it. So they sent a delegation, and they got old, beat-up clothes and worn wineskins and moldy bread, and they went to Joshua, and they said, we heard of your great army, and we want to serve you. And so then Joshua said, okay. Then he found out they were, you know, a couple miles down the road, but they had tricked him, but he had made a promise to them. He had made a covenant that he would let them live and they would be laborers and servants unto Israel. I think they were hewers of wood and gatherers of water or something like that, you know, but they were hewers of wood. So the Gibeonites had lived in Israel for generations and they had served Israel. They didn't bother anybody. They kept to their word and Joshua had made a promise to them. So then Saul, to show that he was a big shot king, to satisfy some people in Israel and Judah, started killing them off. So that's why God sent the famine. So wherefore, David, verse 3, David said unto the Gibeonites, what shall I do for you, and wherewith shall I make atonement that ye may bless the inheritance of the Lord? So he's pretty meek, and he's willing to do whatever it takes to make this right. And they answered the king, the man that consumed us and that devised against us that we should be destroyed from remaining in any of the coast of Israel, let 7 men of his sons be delivered unto us, and we will hang them up unto the Lord in Gibeah of Saul, whom the Lord did choose. And the king said, I will give them. But the king spared Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, because the Lord's oath that was between them, between David and Jonathan, the son of Saul. But the king took two sons of Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, whom he bare unto Saul, Armoni and Mephibosheth, and the five sons of Michal, the daughter of Saul, whom she brought up for Adriel, the son of Basali, and Maholathite. So he gives them seven guys. And remember, Michal had been married to David, right? Mm-hmm. And then Saul took her away from him. Mm-hmm. And so he took her sons. Five sons of Michal. So she had five sons. And he delivered them unto the hands of the Gibeonites. And they hanged them in the hill before the Lord. And they fell all seven together and were put to death in the days of the harvest, in the first days, in the beginning of the barley harvest. And Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, took sackcloth and spread it for her upon the rock from the beginning of the harvest until the water dropped from upon them out of heaven, and suffered neither the birds of the air to rest on them by day, nor beast of the field by night. And it was told David that Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, the concubine of Saul, had done. And David went and took the bones of Saul and the bones of Solomon, his son, from the men of Jabesh Gilead, which had stolen them from the street of Beth-shan, where the Philistines had hanged them. Upon the Philistines had slain Saul in Gibeah, and he brought up from thence the bones of Saul, the bones of Jonathan, his son, and they gathered the bones of them that were hanged, you know, the seven guys. And the bones of Saul and Jonathan, his son, they buried them in the country of Benjamin and Zelah, in the sepulchre of Kish, his father. And they performed all that the king commanded, and after that God was entreated for the land. Which means, and God was satisfied with all David had done, and the land was healed. That's pretty much what verse 14 means. You know, he showed great respect to Saul, because remember, he called him the anointed of the Lord. He always had great respect for him. He loved Jonathan. They were best friends, and he made a covenant with him. And he brought the other seven men, and he buried them in their family tomb. Put them all together, because he just wanted to show respect. Moreover, the Philistines had yet war again with Israel. So now the Philistines come back to war with Israel. And David went down, and his servants with him, and fought against the Philistines. And David waxed faint. He grew tired. Right? He got tired. He was faint. You know, probably got a little dizzy, maybe dehydrated. And Ishbi-benob, what a great name, which was of the sons of the giant. Which giant?
Goliath.
Yeah, the sons of the giant. The weight whose spear weighed 300 shekels of brass in weight, he being girded with a new sword, thought to have slain David. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, succored him and smote the Philistine and killed him. Then the men of David swear unto him, saying, thou shalt go no more out with us to battle, that thou quench not the light of Israel. He said, you can't go with us anymore because you're getting old, and the light in Israel will go out if you get killed. So you got to stay home. We'll fight. So they were very loyal to David.
How old he was at this point?
I don't know. Can't tell you that. And it came to pass, but remember, he was a fugitive for years and years and years and years. He was a young man. Samuel called him out, anointed him privately, basically. He served Saul for a time. He fought the giant. Then he married Michal, so he was, you know, of marriageable age. And then then Saul got jealous of him and decided he wanted to kill him, and he was a fugitive for a number of years. So then when he came back, it was a few more years he had troubles and was come and gone and come and gone. So anyway,
he wasn't
a young guy anymore. He's getting old. And after it came to pass, after this, that there was again a battle with the Philistines at Gob. And Sibekai and Hushathite slew Saph, which was of the sons of the giant. So two other guys slew another son of the giant, who was also pretty big. And there was again a battle in Gob with the Philistines, where Elhanan, the son of Jairoegim, a Bethlehemite, slew the brother of Goliath, the Gittite, the staff of whose spear was like a weaver's beam, which is how it described Goliath's spear. And there was a battle in Gath, where was a man of great stature that had on every hand 6 fingers and on every foot 6 toes, 24 in number. And he also was born of the giant, or to the giant. He was Goliath's son. And when he defied Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shemaiah, the brother of David, slew him. So it was David's nephew. These 4 were born to the giant in Gath and fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. Which Goliath fell by David's hand, the other ones fell by his servant's hand. So that's pretty cool. So they get rid of this family pretty quick. They wipe them out. And that's the end of Goliath's. And, you know, there are, I don't know how much, but there are inscriptions or sculptures in walls and stuff and paintings that show giants, you know, in the Bible lands back in ancient times. So they were there. So if you want to read more or read another record about this, it's in 1 Chronicles chapter 20, verses 4 through 8. I don't think we have to do it. I don't think it adds a whole lot. Nothing significant, I don't think. But chapter 22, we're not going to read the whole thing. We're just going to read a couple. It says, David spake unto the Lord the words of this song in the day that the Lord had delivered him out of the hand of all his enemies and out of the hand of Saul. So obviously, this is not in chronological order, right? Mm-hmm. This was written early on, but it's placed here at this point. And he said, the Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer and the God of my rock. In him will I trust. He is my shield and my horn and my salvation, my high tower, my refuge, my savior. Thou savest me from violence. I will call on the Lord who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from mine enemies. And he goes on from there and he writes Psalms about this. And he speaks of his great trust for God and how much he loves him and all that God does for him. In verse 30, and you know, you can look these up, they're in Psalms. He says, for by thee I have run through a troop, for my God, by my God I have leaped over a wall. As for God, his way is perfect, the word of the Lord is tried. He is a buckler to all them that trust in him. So that's great. So now we go to chapter 23, and we're not going to read all of this, but I wanted to point this out because I think we're going to come back to it later. Because again, this is not chronological. But it says, now these be the last words of David. So apparently this is the last thing he wrote, you know, as far as he wrote down anything in the word Psalms and whatever else. And it says, David, the son of Jesse said, and the man who raised up on high, the anointed of God of Jacob and the sweet psalmist of Israel said, the spirit of the Lord spake by me and his word was in my tongue. The God of Israel said, the rock of Israel spake to me. He that ruleth over men must be just, ruling in the fear of God. So that's pretty wild, you know. He writes this, and it says, and he shall be as a light of the morning when the sun riseth, even the morning without clouds, as a tender grass springing out of the earth by clear shining after rain. Although my house be not so with God, yet he hath made with me an everlasting covenant, ordered in all things and sure. For this is all my salvation and all my desire, although he make it not to grow. Now that's a little confusing, that verse. So in the NIV, it says, is not my house right with God? Question mark. It's a rhetorical question. Okay? Is not my house right with God? Has he not made with me an everlasting covenant, arranged and secured in every part? Question mark. Will he not bring to fruition my salvation and grant me my every desire? So these are all rhetorical questions, three of them, and they don't require an answer because it's obvious that the answer is yes. God will do that for him. The Septuagint writes or translates this verse, for my house is not so with the Mighty One, for he has made me an everlasting covenant, has made an everlasting covenant with me, ready, guarded at every time for all my salvation, and all my desire is that the wicked should not flourish. And the RSV, the Revised Standard Version translates it, is not my house like this with God? For he has made with me an everlasting covenant, ordered in all things and secure. Will he not cause to prosper all my help and all my desire? So that's kind of, you know, a little bit of the last words of David. verses 8 through 39 speak of David's mighty men, which you can read about, and, you know, goes through the different guys, as well as 1 Chronicles chapter 11, 10 through 47. Tells you the same thing. So, and it lists his mighty men. You know, we saw a couple of them when they killed the sons of Goliath. But now we go to chapter 24. And this we could title as David's second sin. And again, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. And he moved David against them to say, go number Israel and Judah. Okay, that sounds kind of weird, right? Doesn't seem to make sense. The Septuagint says, and the Lord caused his anger to burn forth again in Israel. And Satan, and Satan's in italics, stirred up David against them, saying, go number Israel and Judah. And King James should probably read, and David was moved. But let's hold your place here and go to 1 Chronicles chapter 21. Okay, this is the parallel record. It says, and Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel. Okay, so that's really what's going on. So we're going to take time out here because Bullinger explains something in here about this. If you have a companion Bible, it's page 443. And it says, the history in this chapter precedes chapter 23 by the figure hysterologia. You can look that one up. And then it says, he moved. and it means he suffered him to be moved. By the Hebrew idiom, and also by modern usage, a person is said to do that which he permitted to be done. Here we have the historical fact. In 1 Chronicles 12:1, we have the real fact that from the divine standpoint. Here the esoteric is so on and so forth. God's permission, but Satan's suggestion may be taken impersonally. David was moved. So that's what Bullinger says. So in Kings, it's kind of like a figure that God permitted him to do this. But the real fact is that Satan moved him. Satan inspired him, provoked him, incited him. How does Satan work? Well, he works in different ways. You know, he works in the senses realm to try to push us in certain directions, to influence our thinking. So whatever it was, Satan influenced David, and he thought, I should do a census. Well, he wasn't supposed to. He didn't ask God. He didn't inquire of God. So this is what happened. For the king said to Joab, the captain of the host, which was with him, go now through all the tribes of Israel, from Dan even to Beersheba, and number ye the people, that I may know the number of the people. And Joab said unto the king. Now this is the second time that Joab has confronted David about what he's doing. And Joab said unto the king, now the Lord thy God add unto the people how many soever they be, an hundredfold, and that the eyes of my lord the king may see it. But why doth my lord king delight in this thing? Notwithstanding, the king's word prevailed against Joab and against the captains of the host. You know, all the guys, they just said, they were with Joab. They said, we don't need to do this. It's silly. Why do we want to do this? God takes care of us. And Joab and the captains of the host went out from the presence of the king to number the people of Israel. So they went out and did it, but they did it because they were loyal to David. They obeyed him because David insisted, but they didn't really want to do it. You know, they did it not with their heart in it. And they passed over Jordan and pitched in Aroer Air on the right side of the city that lieth in the midst of the river of Gad and toward Jazer. And they came to Gilead and to the land of Tahtim Hodshit. She. And they came to Dan Jahan and about to Zidon and came to the stronghold of Tyre, and to all the cities of the Hivites and of the Canaanites, and they went out to the south of Judah and even to Beersheba. So when they had gone through all the land, they came to Jerusalem at the end of 9 months and 20 days. So it took them 9 months and 20 days to do the census. It's pretty wild. Now let's keep our place here and let's go to 1 Chronicles again. 21. Okay. verse 6. We don't reread stuff. But Levi and Benjamin counted he not among them, for the king's word was abominable to Joab. So he kind of skipped a little. And God was displeased with the thing, therefore he smote Israel. And David said unto God, I have sinned greatly because I have done this thing. But now I beseech thee, do away with the iniquity of thy servant, for I have done foolishly. So as soon as this happens, David realizes he screwed up. You know, terrible thing. Go and tell David, saying, thus saith the Lord. Oh, well, I skipped verse 9, didn't I? Mm-hmm. And the Lord spake unto Gad, David's seer, saying, go tell David, saying, thus saith the Lord, I offer thee three things, choose thee one of them, that I may do this unto thee. So Gad went, came to David and said unto him, thus saith the Lord, choose thee. Stay there, but back in 2 Samuel 24, verse 9 says, and Joab gave the sum of the number of the people unto the Lord, unto the king, and there were in Israel 800,000 valiant men that drew the sword, and the men of Judah were 500,000 men. And David's heart smote him after that he had numbered the people, and David said unto the Lord, I have sinned greatly in that I have done. And now I beseech thee, O Lord, take away iniquity of thy servant, for I have done very foolishly. So, you know, it smote his heart. He had his conscience got to him because he realized he screwed up. Back in 1 Chronicles, verse 11 again, so Gad came to David and said unto him, thus saith the Lord, choose thee. So, you know, this is Gad. Remember, Samuel was the first prophet, and then Gad, and then later Nathan came into play, but Gad's back again. Either 3 years famine, or 3 months to be destroyed before thy foes, while that the sword of thine enemies overtaketh thee, or else 3 days the sword of the Lord, even the pestilence in the land, and the angel of the Lord destroying throughout all the coast of Israel. Now, therefore, advise thyself what word I shall bring again to him that sent me. This is Gad speaking by revelation to David. He says, you got a choice here. And David said unto Gad, I am in a great strait. Well, this is not a great choice. Let me fall now unto the hand of the Lord, for very great are his mercies, but let me not fall into the hand of man. You know, that's pretty smart at that point. You know, he gets real humble real quick. He said, okay, I can't make this decision. Whatever God's will is, let it be done. So the Lord sent pestilence upon Israel, and there fell in Israel 70,000 men. Wow, in 3 days. 3 days. That's crazy. I mean, you think about that. You know, we had a pandemic or whatever, and, you know, people died, but not in 3 days like that. You know, I mean, that just, so. And God sent an angel unto Jerusalem to destroy it. And as he was destroying, the Lord beheld, and he repented him of the evil and said to the angel that destroyed, it is enough. Stay now thy hand. Now that has to be, I'm not sure. I think that has to be an idiom of permission where God just took away his protection. I don't know. I don't really have an answer. That's what it says. And the angel of the Lord stood by the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. Okay, the Jebusites were the people that originally were in Jerusalem. And when Joshua and Israel came into the land, they got rid of all the other peoples, or a lot of them. Obviously, they didn't get rid of the Philistines right away. But they never, and the Jebusites were in Jerusalem. They were up on top of the mount, and they had a fortress. And the Israelites could never get them. But then David, somehow or another, makes peace with them or whatever. So the angel of the Lord stood by the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. And David lifted up his eyes and saw the angel of the Lord stand between the earth and the heaven, having drawn a drawn sword in his hand, stretched out over Jerusalem. Then David and the elders of Israel, who were clothed in sackcloth, fell upon their faces. They were in sackcloth, meaning what? They were showing great humility to God, their repentance. And the elders were with David in this. And David said unto God, is it not that I commanded the people to be numbered? Even I it is that have sinned and done evil indeed. But as for these sheep, what have they done? Let thine hand, I pray thee, O Lord my God, be on me and on my father's house, but not on thy people, that they should be plagued. So, you know, he goes to God and he asks for mercy. Then the angel commanded Gad to say to David that David should go up and set up an altar unto the Lord in the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. I might sneeze. I do. Sorry. And David went up at the saying of Gad, which he spake in the name of the Lord. So, you know, this is, you know, God telling the angel and telling Gad what to do. And they're telling David. And David went up at the saying of Gad, which he spake in the name of the Lord. And Ornan, okay. Now, just to let you know, if you go back to 1 or 2 Samuel, it doesn't say Ornan, it says Araunah, Araunah. But in Chronicles, it's Ornan. It's the same guy. They just spell it different, but it's the same guy. Okay. So David went up saying of God, which spake the same in the name of the Lord. And Ornan turned back and saw the angel and his four sons with him hid themselves. Now Ornan was threshing wheat. And as David came to Ornan, Ornan looked and saw David, verse 21, and went out of the threshing floor and bowed himself to David with his face to the ground. Then David said to Ornan, grant me the place of this threshing floor, that I may build an altar therein unto the Lord. Thou shalt grant it me for the full price, that the plague may be stayed from the people. So David just says, you know, I'm going to give you full price for this. I'm not taking it. You know, I'm not going to appropriate it, but I'm going to pay you. I'm going to pay you a fair price because I have to build an altar here to stop the plague. And Ornan said unto David, take it to thee, and let my lord the king do that which is good in his eyes. Lo, I give thee the oxen also for burnt offerings and the threshing instruments for wood and the wheat for the meat offering. I give it all. So this guy was pretty cool, you know. He just, okay, I don't care. Just take it all. Take the oxen, take my tools, and do what you need to do. And the king said unto Ornan, nay, but I will verily buy it for a full price, for I will not take that which is thine for the Lord, nor offer burnt offerings without cost. So David gave to Ornan for the place 600 shekels of gold by weight. And David built there an altar unto the Lord, and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings, and called upon the Lord, and he answered him from heaven by fire upon the altar of the burnt offering. And the Lord commanded the angel, and he put up his sword again into the sheath thereof. So when it says that, what does it mean? God sent fire down to consume the offering, right? And then the plague was done. So when God sends fire down to consume the offering, it means he accepted it. And okay, we got peace again. At that time, when David saw that the Lord had answered him in the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite, then he sacrificed there for the tabernacle of the Lord, which Moses made in the wilderness, and the altar of the burnt offering were at that season in the high place in Gibeon. But David could not go before to inquire of God, for he was afraid because of the sword of the angel of the Lord. So, so that's how it ends. But let's go back to 1 Samuel 24. 2 Samuel 24, sorry. So let's go to verse 21. And Araunah said, "Wherefore is my lord king come to his servant, the Lord?" And David said, "To buy the threshing floor of thee, to build an altar unto the Lord, that the plague may be stayed from the people." And Araunah said unto David, "Let my lord the king take an offer up that seemeth good unto him. Behold, here be oxen for burnt sacrifice, and threshing instruments, and the instruments of the oxen for wood." All these things did Araunah as a king give unto the king. And Araunah said unto the king, "The Lord thy God accept thee." And the king said unto Araunah, "Nay, but I will surely buy it of thee at a price. Neither will I offer burnt offerings unto the Lord my God of that which doth cost me nothing." So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen for 50 shekels of silver. Okay, before we just read 600 shekels of gold. So Bullinger says, in Samuel, the 50 shekels are given as an earnest, you know, up front. The 600 shekels of gold was given later to buy not just the threshing floor, but the whole area of where the temple was finally built, which covers about 80 acres of land. And that's where the temple was to stand on. So David did foolishly in that he was tempted by Satan and didn't ask God whether he should count or not. So when he did it, he and Israel suffered, you know, the consequences. It's a shame. In verse 25 of 2 Samuel, it says, "And David built there an altar unto the Lord and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. So the Lord was entreated for the land, and the plague was stayed from Israel." In the Septuagint, it adds something to this. There's an additional statement in the verse, and it says, "And Solomon made an addition to the altar afterwards, for it was very little at first." So I just thought that was interesting. So I think we'll stop there, because now we're going to head into the Book of Kings. So that should be exciting. As pardon me?
A very, very bad king and a very, very good king.
Well, he made some bad mistakes.
No. I'm saying in Kings. Isn't Kings, doesn't it say?
Oh, yeah, later on. Yeah, we get into Israel and all that stuff. Yes. But, you know, we still got David and Solomon to go through first. So there's plenty more to do. And there's some other stuff about David that we have to explore.
Okay.
Because before he dies, he instructs Solomon on a lot of stuff. So that's kind of interesting too. So we'll stop there tonight and pick it up next time in Kings. So Father God, we thank you for this night and for your blessing us and keeping us safe and healthy. We thank you, Father, for just the joy it is to look into your word and see the greatness of how you worked with people. And, you know, David had your spirit and he was anointed and he was a man of God, yet he made mistakes. And you had other men there to help him get back on the right track, which is really a great thing. You know, Gad was a man of God, and Nathan was a man of God, and Joab walked with you and really took a stand a couple of times to get David back. So it's just great to see that. And, you know, if David could receive reproof like that and bounce back, what a great example to us who have your spirit in us, and we're your sons, and it just should be so easy for us to accept reproof and get back on the ball. So we thank you for this night and for blessing us and for a great day tomorrow. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.